Okay, evening chanting to develop the spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya and Sati. We will do the short puja. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can be seated. Turn to our retreat version, 14, evening chanting, So we will chant the evening chanting, So for those who are familiar, you chant along, To the Blessed One, the Lord, who fully attained perfect enlightenment, to the teaching which he expounded so well, and to the Blessed One's disciple who have practiced well, to this, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, we render with offerings our rightful homage. It is well for us that the Blessed One, having attained liberation, still had compassion for later generation. May these simple offerings be accepted for our long-lasting benefit and for the happiness he gives us. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Bow. The teaching, so completely explained by him, I bow to the Dhamma. The Blessed One's disciples who have practiced well, I bow to the Sangha. Now let us pay preliminary homage to the Buddha. Homage to him, the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Fully Enlightened One. Homage to him, the Blessed One, the Fully One, and the Fully Enlightened One. Homage to him, the Blessed One, the Worthy One, and Fully Enlightened One. Now let us chant the recollection of the Buddha. A good word of the Blessed One's reputation has spread as follows. Such indeed is the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the perfectly enlightened One, endowed with wisdom and virtue, the accomplished One, the knower of the world, the incomparable master or guide of those to be trained, teachers of God and man, the enlightened one, the blessed one. Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Buddha. The Buddha, the truly worthy one,
endowed with such excellent qualities, whose being is composed of purity, transcendental wisdom and compassion, who has enlightened the wise like the sun awakening the lotus. I bow my head to the peaceful chief of conquerors, the Buddha, who is the safe, secure refuge of all beings. As the first object of recollection, I venerate him with bowed head. I am indeed the Buddha's servant. The Buddha is my Lord and Guide. The Buddha is sorrow destroyer,
who bestow blessings on me.
To the Buddha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk the Buddha's path of awakening.
For me,
there is no other refuge. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Buddha's way. By my devotion to the Buddha and the blessings of this practice, by his power, may all obstacles be overcome. By speech, a body, speech or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Buddha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint regarding the Buddha. Now let us chant in praise of the Dhamma. Well expounded is the Dhamma of the Blessed One, can be realized in the here and the now, beyond time, beyond thought, inviting investigation, onward leading to the heart, Nibbana.
Can be understood by the wise each for themselves.
Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Dhamma. It is excellent because it is well expounded, and it can be divided into path and fruit, practice and liberation. The Dhamma holds those who uphold it from falling into delusion. I revere the excellent teaching, that which removes darkness. The Dhamma, which is the supreme secure refuge of all beings, as the second object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Dhamma servant. The Dhamma is my Lord and Guide. The Dhamma is sorrow's destroyer, and it bestows blessing on me. To the Dhamma, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk this excellent way of truth. For me, there is no other refuge. The Dhamma is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Dhamma and the blessings of this practice, by his power, may all obstacles be overcome.
By body, speech or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Dhamma, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint regarding the Dhamma.
Now let us chant the recollection of the Sangha.
Of good conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of upright conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of wise conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. Of dutiful conduct is the order of the disciples of the Blessed One. This order of the Blessed One's disciples, namely, the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals, is worthy of offerings, is worthy of hospitality, is worthy of gifts, is worthy of reverential salutation, is an incomparable field of merits to the world.
Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Sangha.
Born of the Dhamma, that Sangha which has practiced well, the field of the Sangha, form of eight kinds of noble beings, guided in body and mind, by excellent morality and virtue, I revere that assembly of noble beings, perfected in purity, the Sangha, which is the supreme secure refuge of all beings. As the third object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Sangha's servant. The Sangha is my Lord and Guide. The Sangha is sorrow's destroyer, and it bestows blessings on me. To the Sangha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk the well-practiced way of the Sangha. For me, there is no other refuge. The Sangha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Sangha and the blessing of this practice, by its power, may all obstacles be overcome. By body, speech, or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Sangha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint regarding the Sangha.
Okay, closing puja, huh? We will chant the Pali version.
Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavanta abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami.
Okay, you all can be seated. Since you just have your dinner, I think this 30 minutes of formal sitting and lying down meditation, for today we skip. Maybe for those who take a precept later on, tomorrow onwards, we may have the meditation reinstated. Okay, so that we have more time. So now we will go to the item on 7:45 to 9:15. This is again Q&A, followed by Dhamma discussion and sharing. We are reviewing the Heart Sutta, Dhamma short notes. Oh, Brother Theo, eh? Then after that, at about 9:15, we will have our closing puja. Then that ends the day one of our retreat. Okay, so now we will continue from where we stopped. Eh? So we have finished the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta, the English version. Then there is the Mandarin version. The Mandarin version is Xing Jing. Maybe towards the end, after the closing puja, we may chant the Mandarin version. Guan Zi Zai Pu Sa. So that one is very beautiful and also very meaningful. So for those who are Mandarin educated or understand Mandarin, this Heart Sutta is very helpful. You can develop the understanding. It will help you in penetrating the Dhamma understanding. Okay, we get Tammy. Yeah. Continue 1.3.
Page 6, 1.3. The five khanda of aggregates of form and mind, two aspects to it. 1. First aspect, as a human being where the rupa form is the physical form or body. 2.
So this one you all can understand, huh? As a human being or a living being, we have a physical body. That is the rupa. Then we have the consciousness trapped inside. That is the nama. So the four aggregate of mind plus the physical body become the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. So the final summary of the first noble truth, where the Buddha said, in short, it is due to one Sakkaya Ditti that condition one to grasp at the five aggregate of form and mind that I call suffering. So you have to understand what is this five aggregate of five aggregate of form and mind before you can put it to test. Because the final summary say it is due to our Sakkaya Ditti, self delusion, that condition us to grasp and cling on to this form and mind, thinking that is real, is what we are. That's why we fall into self-delusion. And this delusion is the cause of all suffering. So you don't grasp, don't cling, don't deludedly hold, and develop the meditative understanding to penetrate, like what the Buddha did, that this five aggregate of form and mind is dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you cannot say this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. There is no such thing. If it's dependent originating, it is impermanent. If it's impermanent, how can it be you? How can it be self? That's why all this understanding in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha also share the explanation. Then, for those who meditate with the awareness-based meditation, from the awareness you can see the dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenal movement of all form and mind, whether it's first aspect or second aspect, no different. They have the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Yeah. So all this is clearly spelled out in the teaching. Okay, continue. Tell me.
2. Then the second aspect, as the five mental aggregates where the mental rupa form, external form brought into mind by the aggregates of mental.
The mental rupa or form are external form brought into mind by the aggregates of mental perception or sanya. So like I explained just now, perception brings in the external sense data or external form. Everything that you come to perceive through your senses, all this that you can perceive, it can be through your seeing consciousness or hearing, smell, taste, tactile or thought consciousness. These are called external form, external rupa. Like the Buddha Rupang, my chair, my voice, and everything that you come to perceive. That perception brings all these external form into the mind. So as we all know, the mind has four aggregates. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. Plus the mental form, it becomes the second aspect of the five aggregate of forming mind. And this one is your thought. Because the four aggregate of mind, together with the external form, will create the mental five aggregate. So basically it's Sankara and the pure consciousness. The pure consciousness is like the receptacle. And the content of consciousness that went in are the Sankara, means Vedana, Sanya, and all the mind state or Sankara components. When that one goes in, it triggers off the thought process. That's why you have moral and immoral cause and effect. The mental intention behind all your content of consciousness define your karmic content. So this karmic consciousness that is being created will move, will manifest in accordance with that nature's law. They call it the law of karma, karma niyama. So this second aspect is what I explained just now. The paticca samuppada, the law of dependent origination, where the Buddha taught us under the teaching how we function as a human being, how our mind moves, dependent on ignorance, how it conditions sankhara activity. And that sankhara activity is what thinking is all about. That's why it makes contact with the brain and trigger off consciousness, the vijnana. So the consciousness, which is the third link, is the pure consciousness before the content go in. But the moment living being input the content, it becomes namarupa. You understand? Second aspect of the five aggregate. So that form and mind has with its content is your thought, basically your citta. So this is how you can develop the understanding. Okay, then maybe this one I will explain. Huh? There is a diagram down there. Huh? You see the circle. There is a form. Then the opposite side is rupa, pali. Then mind, the opposite side is nama. So attached to these are the four rectangles. Yeah? These are the aggregates of mind. So the first one is Vedana, which is feeling. Then the second one is Sanya, or perception, followed by Sankara and Vijnana. The English translation are there. So these four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vijnana, they are what your thought is all about. So Sankara equals to mental formation, mental activity, mental state, mental intention, then I add in mental planning, scheming, your cunningness and whatever. That is everything that your mind can do, including your feeling and perception, is Sankara. Then consciousness or Vijnana is a receptacle, or the container, like the vessel to receive the content. So this receptacle is actually the pure Vijnana, like the Buddha said. at the moment of sense experience, you only able to see the respective sense door consciousness without its content. That's why the Buddha always say, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness, in the hearing is only the hearing consciousness. And this refers to a newborn baby. Newborn baby, the senses are not fully developed. But as they develop, they begin to like, starts to receive all this sense experience. So because their brain at that time, there was no knowledge, no conditioning, like clean slate. No word, nothing. That's why it cannot perceive anything, but it can see things as they are. Understand? Not? Means the baby see with the pure awareness. That is what will happen initially. They got nothing in their brain to input the content. But after we are born, we are being taught, conditioned, and develop all the knowledge and so-called understanding, but these are all our views, opinion, conditioning, belief system that we accumulate, our experiences as we go through life. Then we accumulate all of them, whether it's moral or immoral, good or bad experiences. That's why sometimes you accumulate the psychological memory which are very negative. Your phobia, your fear, your insecurity, and your so-called sorrow and lamentation. And sometimes your deep resentment, anger, hatred, and all these are evil roots. And sometimes your selfish intent. Then of course phobia is whatever that has haunted you until you have a lot of inherent fear. That's why it becomes a phobia. Especially when people mistreat the child, or you went through traumatic experiences. So now they got such medical view as trauma, how to actually help people with traumatic experiences of phobia. They got trauma ward where they admit you, then they help you recover from the trauma. Means that very severe shock. So when you don't have all this, then you see things as they are, like the Buddha said. In the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. It's like you try to look at that piece of art, the center rectangular brown big art. But because we have knowledge, understand, we know it's calligraphy art, maybe from the way you perceive it, you can describe it a tree or with whatever. But if let's say you are a newborn baby, you don't have any of this memory conditioning knowledge, what do you see? You see things as they are, understand, not? Without the words, without the concept, without the labeling. The direct seeing is to see like that. That's why living being who has a lot of this brain activity or accumulated knowledge, they cannot see. They immediately wants to perceive, goes to the memory. Then from there, their views, opinion, conditioning, belief system condition them to react to what they see. That's why you stir your mind or you create the thought activity to label it, describe it. So when you do that, you actually didn't see anymore. Why? Because the word, the concept become more important than that thing. Because we have been trained in this way, the accumulated knowledge. That's why sometimes we see something, like this microphone. We have the word, the concept is there, microphone. Do you really see? You take for granted, is that microphone, what is there to see? But if I see it with the direct seeing, I see this as it is, without the word. And then I observe everything about this. That is clarity, direct seeing. I see things as they are. Not with the conditioning, belief system, knowledge. So this is the big difference. And that seeing with memory is perception via the mundane mind. That's why we call it the mundane seeing. But you use the pure awareness without the memory, the interference from the mundane thinking, memory and conditioning, then you see things as they are via the direct see, like the baby, newborn. Yeah. That's why that type of seeing is the enlightenment mind seeing. The first seeing is mundane seeing. Under the Zen analogy, they say, if you look at mountain, mundane seeing, then you say, kan san, si san, means you see mountain as mountain. You perceive it through your mundane memory, mountain. But when you have the direct seeing with the pure awareness, you see things as they are. There is no word, nothing. Kan san, pu si san, because you cannot label. It's no longer what you think. It's that thing as it is. That's why jnana dasana, seeing things as it is, as they are. That is the awakening. If you can see things as they are, means you see truth, you see reality. You do not see through your memory, your views, opinion, conditioning, belief system and delusion. That's why the direct seeing via the pure awareness is very different. So these four aggregates of mind, they are the content of consciousness and its receptacle. This one is the thought. This is not your true mind. Understand? So to meditate is to silence all this so that the thinking stops or does not arise. And then that true mind, silent mind, which is your pure awareness nature, that tranquil and still mind. Calm, peaceful, tranquil and still. No thought activity, no aggregate. And that is the true mind. You have to meditate with that. Use that to see things as they are, to develop the understanding. When you silently stay with the pure awareness nature, that nature can insight into phenomena and awaken to the three universal characteristics. It can see things as they are. Within that silent inner awareness, it understands. It's just like when we observe what happened. How does our consciousness during the moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, stir and cause us to be emotional? Initially, like fear, there was no fear. Then how come upon hearing something, there is fear? Or seeing something, there is anger. Yeah. Or you smell something, there is aversion. All this reaction to sense experience come from the mundane thinking. That's why when you silently observe, then you realize before anger arise, there was no anger. Which means, intrinsically, anger is dependent originating. It's not intrinsic within your nature. Before you get angry, before there was fear, there was none. They come later through your wrong view. They arise through thought delusion. That's why it's dependent originating. The manifestation is through the mundane mind. So when you know anger is not you, fear is not you, they are dependent originating mind state, then you know they are impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. They come and they go. They arise and they pass away. Then why do you deludedly believe that they are you, the five aggregates? The feeling that you experience, you think is you. The perception that you manifest, you think there is a thinker or a person behind to perceive all this. Then all the anger, hatred, including your fear, all of your mental state that you experience, you believe is real, is what you are. But because without the pure awareness nature, you cannot see how it arises and how it passes away. That's why when you have the pure awareness, the mindfulness leading to heedfulness, you can see clearly the law of dependent origination, the paticca-samuppada, and how all the cause and effect manifest, how causes and conditions create the phenomenal world. So all this understanding will wake you up. Then you're no longer deluded. Then you see clearly, this five aggregate of form and mind are just a phenomena manifested to the nature's law of dependent origination, paticca-samuppada. They are not intrinsic in you. They are not real. They are dependent originating condition arising causal phenomena that manifest through causes and conditions. So seeing all this, awakening to all this, give rise to wisdom. Then you will not be deceived by what people tell you. So a lot of cultivators' problem is, they believe once you are enlightened, you got no more greed, no more hatred, no more delusion, no more fear, no more craving, all this gone, isn't it? True or not? So what you do? You try to meditate, you go to retreat, in and out of retreat, then you develop the calm, tranquility, you think you're enlightened. But the moment you go back to your daily life and activity, then you realize in between, you still have anger, that's how. You still have craving, you still have desire. Then you become like disappointed. Ayo, after cultivating for so long, after believing that I have already make it or awakened to it or developed the enlightenment, actually is not the case. So where did the delusion lie? Where you believe that anger was you, understand? Or? You cannot see that anger was never you. That anger is dependent originating, condition arising. It manifests due to wrong view. Nothing to do with your intrinsic nature. Your intrinsic nature has none of all this. It's without word, without concept, without any of this so-called mundane activity and thinking. That's why when you have this direct seeing, when you observe with a silent mind, it awakens. Then you realize, if anger is not me, fear is not me, then why do I worry about it? Because these are my habitual tendencies, born of wrong view, that stir my mind and cause all this to arise. If I understand, then it's no more a problem, no more an issue, then it ceases to be. Then I don't have to worry about whether I am without fear, without what, none of all this. Because the form and mind goes the way of nature. It is something within the conditioned world. That's why it follows the conditioned Dhamma. See, then don't attach, don't cling, and don't give meaning so that you will not get yourself deludedly entangled. That's why Sakaya Ditti is very powerful. The egoic entity that believe is you, that one not easy to root out unless you develop the pure awareness nature within to awaken. Okay? So now we sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now we ask Tammy to continue.
Okay. Perception or sanya is translated as cognition by the Venerable Master Xuanhua in his book, The Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutra. Vedana, Sanya, and Sankara are content of consciousness. Sankara equals to mental formation, mental activities, mental states, mental intention, mental planning, scheming, etc. Everything that the mind can do, including feeling and perception. Consciousness or vijnana is receptacle or the container. Six sense doors, eye, ear, nose, tongue, bodily tactile, and mental doors. Part 2. Meditation and important essential dharma. 2.1. The five mental hindrances that hinder the mind from becoming peaceful and aware within are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, sleepiness or lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. To counter it, we need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculties. 2.2. The opposite five spiritual faculties are sadha, faith, viriya, spiritual zeal, sati, mindfulness, samadhi, collectedness or unwavering mind, and panya, wisdom. 2.3. Five daily reflections or contemplation leading to initial wisdom. 1. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old and decay, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. 2. This body of ours is of the nature to be diseased or get sick, for it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. 3. This body of ours is of the nature to die, for it has not gone beyond death. 4. All that is dear to us, our loved ones, our wealth, possessions, etc., are impermanent and conditions arising. Hence, they will separate from us one day. 5. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. 2.4. Meaning of craving, meditation, and attachment or clinging. Craving, wanting things your way, reacting to craving leading to suffering. Meditation, listening, hearing, reading, plus contemplation, plus direct seeing, leading to awakening. Attachment is grasping or clinging via delusion, condition, suffering.
Okay, thank you. So, 2.4, you look at the three, craving. Craving, like I explained earlier on, there are three according to Theravada tradition teaching. Kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha means craving for the senses, sensual craving. All our senses can develop craving, desire, like and dislike, negative and positive craving. Then craving to be, bhava tanha, and craving not to be is also a craving. So take for example our daily life. When we are young, we got ambition in there. So we crave to be successful. We crave to be wealthy. We crave to be famous. Then as you come out into the job environment, your career, you also have craving to go up the corporate ladder. Initially, maybe you are contented with minor promotion, like the Maslow need theory, food and shelter most important. After you have this, your craving grow. Then you develop more craving. Means food and shelter, basic need you have already. So you crave to own a beautiful house, beautiful car, marry a beautiful wife or husband, then have beautiful family. So this craving continue. Then after that, not enough, is it? You want self-esteem, you want praise, you want to be identified as famous, successful, or very powerful entity. So that's why you aim to become the CEO. And there are some who play games. They aim to be world champion. So initially, state level champion, national champion, not enough. They want to be world champion. But the whole world can only have one champion at any one time for any game. So all these are craving to achieve, to reach, and all this. So this craving to be, especially when you crave to become very senior in your company, like assistant managing director or CEO or managing director, do you know that these are very hot seat? The one that stay up there cannot last long, very fast, because of whatever, politic or what. People will try to replace you. So when you are not there, you believe when you get there, you will be very happy, very famous, self-esteem, everything. You will be very wealthy too, they pay you very well. But that comes with what? Stress. Understand? And all the various pressure that they expect of you. Yes, whatever they pay you, they expect you to deliver, otherwise you have to go. So after a while up there, when the pressure and the stress is very high, you crave not to be, understand? Why you say, this is terrible, this is stressful, I think I better don't stay on. But a lot of people cannot understand. They stay on, they fight until the end. Finally, miserable. So craving to be and not to be is both detrimental and lead to suffering. Why must you crave? If it's your passion, you work towards it, understand? Of course, if you are destined to be the world champion or the CEO, you work your way up. You reach the pinnacle of your career or whatever that you excel in. And then you will be happy, understand? You don't have to go the crooked way to cheat and to deceive and to fight for all this. That's why our existence, this universe, or take for example maybe our planet, in our society, you can crave for whatever you want, but these are not reality. End of the day, everything go back to what they call the existing reality. You heard of this Mandarin saying, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na ma si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu le. The English translation is, when we are born into this world, we came empty-handed. True or not? Eh? True or not? Then when you die, you go, also empty-handed, isn't it? Then why do you, in between, grieve over emptiness? Do you see the point or not? You fight, you struggle, you actually do a lot of funny things that is against the nature's law of karma. Then you get yourself entangled with all the karmic negativity. Then finally, you cannot bring along anything. That's why empty nature or existence, that is the meaning of emptiness. You come empty, you go empty. In between, why do you grieve over emptiness? The sorrow, the lamentation, the stress. That's why you don't understand life, you become deluded. Through ignorance, you toy and you do all this. We call funny thing, leading to more and more stupidity. Yeah. So when you understand, you wake up, then you know within the existential world, there are laws that governs life and existence. So you make sure you understand this law, then you will not get yourself into trouble. Because when you understand this law, you do your duty. And so that's why the enlightened beings, the Four Noble Qualities of the enlightened disciples of the Buddha, One of them is of right duty, is the order of the disciple of the Buddha. And that one is in the salutation to the Sangha. That's why Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho, then Ujjupatipanno, then followed by Jnanapatipanno, then finally is Samichi Patipanno, of right duty, is the disciple of the order of the disciple of the Blessed One or the Buddha. So first one is of good conduct, upright conduct, then of wise conduct. Then the last one is of dutiful conduct. You do your duty. So our condition, when you understand the Dhamma, you will do your duty. You will not simply do things. That's why the law of karma is very powerful. So you look at the fifth daily contemplation just now. We went through. The Buddha said we are all born our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So knowing this, what must you do? Yeah? Every one of us, no exception. No. You have to take care of karma. He said, your karma forms such major aspect of your life. You are born of it. Heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. And you are what you are every moment, every instant, because of your karmic nature's conditioning. So when you understand this, if you want to have the good life, you must take care of karma. And how do you take care of karma? Yeah? Follow the advice of Lord Buddha, isn't it? Dhammapada verse 183. Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan secitta pariyottapanang etang buddha sasana. So what is sabbe? All. Papasa akaranang. All evil you have to avoid. Avoiding evil is to keep your precept. If you keep the minimum five precept, you avoid major evil. And that is what taking care of karma is all about. When you avoid all evil, you take care of your karma. It will prevent you from having this friction of the negative karma. That's why avoiding all evil, we are keeping the precept. It's a meritorious virtue and action. So you can do that. It protects you. So the Buddha, out of love and compassion for you, advise you to avoid all evil via keeping your minimum five precepts. Because you check the five precepts. Who are the ones that violate the five precepts or break the precept? Take for example the first precept, Panatipata Viramani Sikapada Samadhi Yami. I undertake the training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. Who will kill and who will cause harm to fellow living beings? Eh? Selfish people, isn't it? Deluded people, isn't it? Angry and violent people, isn't it? The three evil roots are all there. If the roots of all evil are there, means these constitute major evil. Those who break this precept has evil coming. Action, speech and thought process. That's why from this, the teaching comes about. That's why you have to take refuge to develop affinity with Triple Gem and Great Beings. Then you have to renew your five precepts. All this comes from the advice of the Buddha when you understand. And because the Buddha, being the fully enlightened one, he knows we are all born our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported, and we are what we are because of karma. So the first one is to avoid all evil. So the first right effort to abandon whatever wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. It's a purification process. It's how you cultivate. Then after that, kusalesa, wholesomeness. Whatever wholesomeness, when there is condition to arise or manifest, you must do. Kusalesa upasampadan. So that you need the third and fourth right effort to cultivate whatever virtue, wholesomeness and goodness of action, speech and thought that you still have not developed. So right effort to constantly cultivate it. Then the fourth right effort is to refine upon it and perfect it until you develop the ultimate perfection of them all. And this is how you cultivate. Then the last one, the Buddha said, having good karma, able to avoid all evil, do good is not enough. Because this one doesn't guarantee you the good life. When you confront the first noble truth reality, you can still suffer despite your wealth. Understand that? Because you do not have the wisdom. That's why the third advice is what? Sacitta. Citta is mind. Pariyutapnang. You have to purify that mind. Then the final advice is, these are all the advice of the Buddha. Eta Buddhana Sasana. So understanding all this will lead to the understanding of how the teaching come about and how you should cultivate. That's why this understanding is seldom taught. They seldom link the teaching and Dhamma to explain to you how all this come about. So knowing all this, we will be able to develop the meditative wisdom. How to purify your mind through cultivation, developing mindfulness to insight into phenomena, to awaken to the truth, to develop the direct seeing, to realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. And through all this, you can become different. Enlightenment in the here and the now become possible. Then you understand life. Then you can live life. So all this is what the teaching and the cultivation is capable of. So develop the faith, cultivate sincerely, develop heedfulness. First, by cultivating mindfulness, stabilize it, and use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is Noble Eightfold Path. So all these are connected. Okay? And now we continue. Huh? Tell me, yeah.
Page 9, Second Heart Sutta class, part 1.1. The 10 perfection of paramita of the Theravada tradition. Dana, giving or generosity. Sila, morality. Nikama, renunciation. Panya, wisdom. Virya, spiritual zeal or strong tenacity or energy to cultivate. Kanti, patience, Satcha, truthfulness, Adhitana, aspiration or resolution or self-determination, Metta, loving-kindness, Upekkha, equanimity. These are the 10 perfections that the Bodhisattva who is intent to be a Sammasambuddha must cultivate and perfect. 1.2. The 6 perfections or paramitas of the Mahayana tradition. Dana, giving or generosity. Kanti, patience. Dhyana, samadhi. Sila, perception or morality. Virya, vigor or spiritual zeal. Prajna, wisdom. 1.3. Words of wisdom by the Buddha, extracted from the Dhammapada verses. On avoiding all evil, do good and purify the mind, we are having the right view with regards to the law of karma. Verse 1. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So if one speaks, acts or thinks and with a wicked or unwholesome mind, then suffering will follow one like the wheel that follows the hoof of the ox. Verse 2. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So if one speaks, acts, or thinks with a pure or wholesome mind, then happiness will follow one like the shadow that never leaves him. Verse 183. All evils have to be avoided. Cultivate whatever good when there are conditions and purify the mind. This is the advice of all Buddhas. Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23 on heedfulness, apama davaga. Verse 21. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedlessness is the path to the death. The heedful do not die. The heedless are as if dead. Verse 22. Distinctly understanding these differences, the wise intend on heedfulness and rejoice in the realms of the Aryas or the enlightened ones. Verse 23. The constantly meditative, the ever mindful and the steadfast one realizes the boundary Nibbana. 1.4. Buddha's advice before his parinibbana. Apamadena sampadeta. Strive on with heedfulness. Note, the heedful never die, eternal life spiritually. The heedless are as if dead spiritually. No chance of gaining enlightenment. 1.5. Final summary of the first noble truth of dukkha. In short, it is the attachment or grasping and clinging to the five grasping aggregates or upadana khanda of form and mind via one's delusion or ignorance that I call dukkha. The word dukkha or Sanskrit dukkha is one of those Pali terms that cannot be translated adequately into English by one word, or no English word covers the same ground as dukkha in Pali. Suffering, ill will, anguish, unsatisfactoriness are some favorite renderings. The word pain, misery, sorrow, conflict, and so forth are also used. The word dukkha, however, includes all that and more than that. Reference page 37 of Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasidhara. 1.6. The seven petals of enlightenment or Satta Bojanga. Sati or mindfulness is the first of the seven petals of enlightenment, followed by the investigation of Dhamma or Dhamma Vichaya, which is the second factor of enlightenment. Without sati, one cannot be heedful or ever mindful. Hence, one cannot investigate the Dhamma. That is the reason why sati or heedfulness is very important for sati is life, because the heedless are as if dead. With sati, one can investigate the Dhamma, and if it is the truth, then this Dhamma will stand out for investigation, thereby giving up the strong faith in the Buddha. Then viriya, or the spiritual zeal, which is the third enlightenment factor, will arise, thereby enabling one to cultivate the Dhamma according to the Buddha's advice. Sati will then stabilize, and piti, or the spiritual joy, which is the fourth factor of enlightenment, will arise. Once piti is stabilized and become more refined, it will accumulate into pasadi, or tranquility of mind, which is the fifth factor of enlightenment. With pasadi becoming more and more stable, the mind will accumulate into samadhi, a stable, collected, and unwavering mind, which is the sixth enlightenment factor. With sati and samadhi in place, wisdom or panya will keep on arising, giving rise to the last or seventh enlightenment factor, which is equanimity or upekkha. Note, samadhi, a stable, collected, and unwavering mind that does not waver at the moment of sense experience while in the midst of life.
Okay, so this one, the samadhi means the enlightenment factor of the teachings of the Buddha under his seven factors of enlightenment. This one is a free mind. In that state, it's not a conditioned mind. You don't need energy field or jhana or concentration or one-pointedness of mind to make the mind equanimous. That one is not the real samadhi. Yeah. The real samadhi under the enlightenment factor is different. It's a free mind, but collected, unwavering. Now this one, the Mahayana teaching is very good, the Zen teaching. They always emphasize on this type of samadhi. So this type of samadhi is not concentration, it's different. So when you understand, you know that the seven factors of enlightenment that just now Tammy read through is very clearly explained and defined by Lord Buddha. He said the first enlightenment factor is sati. Why? Because without sati, there is no inner awareness or mindfulness to see, to develop the wisdom and the understanding, and even to investigate the Dhamma. That's why the first factor of enlightenment is always sati, mindfulness, awareness, before the knowing, without thought. Then when you have sati, that is the beginning of cultivation. With sati, you can see things as they are. You can investigate into the teaching, the Dhamma that the Buddha taught. That's why he called that Dhamma Vichaya. When you do the investigation of all the Dhamma that he has taught you, that is the enlightenment factor. Then when it stands up to investigation, like Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, the Buddha explained very clearly, our mind, mano, the mundane mind, is the forerunner of all things. And that mind is chief. When that mind arises, all things arise. That's like the law of karma, everything manifests when you input the content of consciousness. So that one decides. So if you act, speak and think with a heedless mind, means you didn't train your mind to be heedful or mindful, then what happens is suffering will follow you. Just like the wheel that follows the hoof of the cart. So if you want your life to be such, then no need to cultivate, no need to be heedful, no need to train, no need to cultivate. Continue with your heedless behavior. And then continue to act, speak and think with a heedless mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and evil. And then suffering will follow you, if that is what you want. If you don't want that, then what must you do? You must avoid Dhammapada verse 1, follow Dhammapada verse 2. So Dhammapada verse 2 clearly states, if you train your mind, develop heedfulness, then you will act, speak and think with a heedful mind that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. If you do that, then happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So very easy to decide that. Yeah? Your life, you hold the key to your own life destiny. You can develop the choice appropriately. If you choose to be happy, you will be happy. But why is it in this world there are so many people who are so miserable and so unhappy? You mean they don't know how to choose? You see the delusion behind or not? Because they don't know this teaching. If you know this teaching by now, you know heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Means whatever you do, you are heedless. The evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion will condition your negativity of karma. Then it will lead to suffering, misery. Is that what you want? If that is not what you want, then wake up. That's why I be immediately, no, why should I end up in choosing that deluded way? I instead will strive on with heedfulness, understand not? Develop the awareness within, stabilize it, then use it to live the proper life so that happiness will follow me like the shadow that never leaves. That's why the heedful never die. The heedless are sifted. So wake up. And to be heedful is Dhammapada verse 23. Very clear. The ever mindful, constantly meditative and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. And how do you develop the what they call ever mindful mind. That's why you have to train the mind to be mindful first, then stabilize it so that you are ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path constantly, so that you develop the ability to be in the state of constantly meditative. Yeah. And that is what heedfulness is, two parts. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. So all this point towards the teaching. That's why all this Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183, 21, 22, 23 are the important Dhammapada verse that I extracted out to share and teach. If you see the importance of all this, then you will definitely go into it. And to develop the progress is very easy. When you understand this, you cultivate accordingly, you will progress, you will transform. Yeah. Then, coming back to the enlightenment factor, I didn't finish. After you develop the Dhamma investigation, with the sati that you have developed, then it stand up to the investigation. Means what? You have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, isn't it? The saddha will drive you, and that driving force is the third enlightenment factor, virya, spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity to go this way, where you see the importance of this teaching, the beauty of this teaching, the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. That's why sati will lead to dhammavicaya, dhammavicaya will lead to virya, then with virya, you will cultivate and experience piti. When your mind is calm, tranquil, still, then it will experience initially piti. Then from piti, normally it will go to what we call sukhang, which is not an enlightenment factor. It's a jhanic factor. But you can experience it as pass through. You no need to cling on to it or develop the attachment to it. Then once your piti is there, you relax. The key support is relax into it. If you don't relax into it, then it will continue to become very blissful. But if you relax into it, it becomes less, it becomes less luring. It will not draw you more into sukhang. It will instead cause the mind to be more relaxed and quiet. Then that piti will become like slow down until very quiet, until no more thinking, and become very still. So relaxation is very important. That's why once piti arises, if you continue to relax and maintain mindfulness and awareness, then this become parsati. Parsati is the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. Means you realize your true mind. The mind becomes so quiet and so still until there is no thought process, nothing. No thinking, nothing. But this parsati is not really that stable. But it is a very good realization. Well, even a glimpse of it will make you understand that you have two minds. One is that mind which is pure awareness before the arising of thought. You will see that if you do it correctly. Yeah. That's why from parsati, once you know you have two minds, one is the mano, dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, the mundane thinking mind. That one lead to heedlessness. Then immediately you will know you have to intend, like the wise one, intend on heedfulness. Means you relax and go back into sati and let it become very quiet and very still. And let your mind enter sati. Once your mind enters sati, you realize parsati, the true mind, the silent mind. Then that one can stabilize. That parsati can become more and more stable. Then your daily mindfulness becomes continuous. then your mind is always in sati. Seeing is in sati. Hearing is in sati. Smell, taste, tactile and thought process, everything is in sati. Then you realize the mind becomes collected, unwavering. And there is a free mind in sati, not in concentration. That's how it transforms into samadhi. A free mind that is collected and unwavering. Then when this free mind that is collected and unwavering, that has this stability, then in the midst of life, when you encounter sense experience, it does not waver, understand? It's collected and unwavering. And when it does not waver, what happens is it can see things as they are. It does not get stirred or conditioned into negativity, into light and dislike. It stays there. That's why you will have more and more moments of silence, tranquility. We call it the space between thought. Means there is no arising of thought after that. At the moment of sense experience, it is collected and unwavering. Then if you have contemplated and reflected and developed the second turning wisdom, this initial wisdom, which is yonima, yonisum, manasikara, will prompt you. Then you will not be deluded by what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And from there, you awaken. That's why that awakening, that wisdom, will give rise to that ability of that cultivator to develop what we call the equanimous mind, upeka. It's like upeka is the seven factors of enlightenment, the last one. And without wisdom, upeka cannot arise. Without yoniso manasikara, upeka does not arise. That's why the Buddha is the Buddha, is because whether in the midst of life or in the meditative state, he is not affected. That's why he is the Buddha. It doesn't mean that when he's in the retreat meditative state, then his mind becomes equanimous. Nothing can affect him. But when he is out of the retreat of meditation, then he go into life. Then like the Chincha incident or those things, if he is not the real Buddha, he will be affected in the sana. But because he is the real Buddha, that's why his mind has this upeka. He knew that all these are not real. Empty nature of existence. Empty nature of life and existence. Not what you think. It's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, grasp on to and hold on to. And he only know that he has a duty to do towards the nature's law, karma. And his vow enable him to share and teach. That's why all this understanding is there. That's why he has the upeka mind, equanimous mind, that does not waver or become stirred and affected. So this upeka, the seventh factor of enlightenment, is described by the Buddha very clearly under his teaching. And you check the five spiritual faculty, it end up with panya. Seven factor of enlightenment, it end up with upeka. Why? Because actually, after you have pasati, you develop heedfulness. You develop the mind that is tranquil and still. That is your true mind, your meditative mind. And that one can see things. That one give rise to wisdom first. Yeah. But wisdom is not a enlightenment factor. Your wisdom, once it arrives, you already wise, anasana. It's no more a factor for you to become maybe more wise or what. No need, anasana. That's why after pasati, you go to samadhi. After samadhi, you end up with the wisdom leading to upeka. So his teaching doesn't contradict himself. Everything is very clearly express, proclaim and taught. So if you look at all this, then you will start to appreciate how wise the Buddha is and how unique a teacher he is. Okay, so we will continue.
One point seven, the three universal characteristics: one, anicca, impermanence; two, dukkha, suffering; and three, anatta, non-self, an empty nature or not a permanent unchanging entity. 1.8, the five universal law or orders, pancha niyama, that governs all the life and existence in this universe are: first two are scientific laws of 1. Uttu niyama, or the physical law of nature, and 2. Bija niyama, the biological order of nature. Next three are spiritual laws of nature of 3. Kamma niyama, or the law of karma; 4. Citta niyama, or the law of the mind; and 5. Dhamma niyama, or the law of truth, Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Understanding these three spiritual laws that govern all of our life and existence will give rise to the three important right views as taught by the Buddha in this Noble Eightfold Path, that is, right view with regards to the 1. Law of karma, that is, you reap what you sow, do good begets good, and do evil begets evil, and you are born of your karma, and to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of karma, etc. 2. Law of the mind, that is, the 12 links dependent origination, or paticca samuppada. 3. Law of the Dhamma, that is, the Four Noble Truths, 5 aggregates of form and mind, and 5 spiritual faculties. Understanding these three great spiritual laws is likened to understanding the secret of life, giving rise to the wisdom to enable one to truly live life. Having these right views will lead to the understanding of non-delusion, non-attachment, non-grasping, and non-clinging, etc., hence freeing and liberating one's mind from all suffering. These pancha niyamas can also be explained by the four aspects of the Dhamma or nature as taught by Ajahn Buddhadasa. 1. First aspect, there is nature. 2. Second aspect, there are laws that govern nature. 3. Third aspect, there is a right duty that one must perform towards this law that governs nature. 4. Fourth aspect, reaping the fruit of one's hard work after having performed the right duty. 1.9, the three errors or the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusions are: 1. Lobha, which includes all of your greed, selfishness, lust, craving, covetousness, desire, deceitfulness, cunningness, etc. 2. Dosa, which includes all of your hatred, anger, aversion, envy, jealousy, dislike, negative emotions, sorrow, lamentation, grief, etc. And 3. Moha, which is self-delusion or sakkayaditti that condition one's egoic mind to arise the three evil roots of lobha, dosa, and moha, leading to all the egoic personality of selfishness, craving, fear, worry, anxiety, etc. They are the roots of all evil. If you have them in your mind or consciousness, then it will condition and cause you to become a very evil person. So it is very important to develop the training of the mind by meditation to be always heedful, so that we can be aware of our mental intention all the time. And if there is any of the three evil roots, then we should arise the appropriate right effort to either abandon it or prevent it from arising. Otherwise, it will condition us into negativity, leading to all the suffering. As they are also called the three poisons, they will kill you spiritually if we allow them to stay in our mind. 1.10, seeing beyond form and understanding Nibbana. To develop basic wisdom, one must have the ability to see form as they are, and the unreality of form via its condition arising, its impermanent suffering, and non-self-empty nature, leading to our ability to see beyond form. Inability to see beyond form will result in form delusion, because one will grasp at external objects external forms, via one's own delusion caused by identification with external forms, thinking that they are all so real as from device. So form we identify via identification with, let's say, our external form, which is the physical body, then one will create the attachment to this body via delusion, hence worrying about it getting old, swelling, sick and dying. It can also create duality of male and female gender, race identification, young and old, or age identification, that is leading to all the unnecessary fear, worries, anxiety, possibility of conflict and arguments caused by external form identification and division. Unless you have the ability to see beyond form, chances are you will not be able to see mind, because mind is much subtler and intangible than the solid external form. And unless you can see mind, the mundane mind as it is, via silent mind, in sati, true wisdom cannot arise, for nibbana is the cessation of form and mind. So learn to see form, the unreality of form, then learn to see beyond form, leading to your ability to see the mundane mind clearly. This can then lead to the realization of the impermanence and empty nature of the mundane or thinking mind, leading to the ability to see beyond the mundane mind via the silent mind, to realize one's true nature, which is beyond thought and beyond mind. At the mundane mind level, one still clings on to one's view and opinion and religious labels, etc. Hence the division again. At mind level, leading to all the conflicts and arguments caused by one's self-delusion as before. Note, words divide via form and thought identification due to sakkayadikki or ignorance. Hence, only if one can see things as they are, that is via the direct seeing without words, concept and labeling, etc., only then there is no more form and thought delusion to condition one's grasping and clinging, leading to all the suffering. That is, if you cannot see form and the unreality of form, then you will not be able to see beyond form, and everything you come to perceive via your mundane mind, which is consciousness only, will be like so real and so meaningful to you, hence the self-delusion and or sakkayadikki. Also, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 said, mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is chief, and everything arises from the mind. So one must be wary of the mind. Part 2.
Okay, we stop here for a toilet break, 3 minutes, then come back. Okay, sorry. The recording was not on, yes, sorry. So, turn back to page 13. So just now Tammy read to you all, section 1.10, seeing beyond form and understanding Nibbana. So here, I have described to you all the important pointers of cultivation. First one is to develop basic wisdom. What is basic wisdom? Means initial basic wisdom. One must have the ability to see form as they are. When you can see form as they are, then you can see the unreality of form. You must see how it arises and passes away. All phenomena exhibit the same universal characteristic, and every phenomena or form, they are condition arising entity. Hence its impermanence, leading to suffering and non-self or empty nature. Once you see this, then you have the ability to see beyond form. So inability to see beyond form will result in form delusion. Means all the external form that you come to perceive will have power over you. Because when you deludedly, through form delusion, grasp and cling at external form via your own sakkayadikki caused by identification with external form, thinking that they are real. Then as form divides. So once you identify your identification with them, let us say external form, which is the physical body, yeah? Then you create the attachment to this physical body via self-delusion. Hence, you worry about your physical body getting old, getting sick and die, because you think it is real, it belongs to you. So this is how form delusion creates suffering. Because you cannot see, like the Buddha when he awakened. He sees the unreality of form, that physical body and mind, the five aggregate of form and mind is dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity. Hence, not what you think. So this is very important. Then the other division that brings about conflict and misunderstanding is we straight away get trapped in form. We think we are different at the form level. We have male and female, the gender. Then we have race identification. We got Chinese, Westerner, Negro, and all the various type of races based on form identification, means your skin color define you. Then we have young and old identification, etc., leading to all the unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, misunderstanding, and possibility of conflict and argument caused by external form identification and division. So at the form level, it's already so powerful. So as we all know, yeah, the Buddha explained, our consciousness is like a magician, the greatest magician. It creates form illusion. That's why from the four circle formation, the first to arise from the pure nature or the oneness nature is our pure awareness nature. And if you cannot meditate to realize that, then you cannot see the creation process. How from the pure awareness nature it creates the mundane mind, the five aggregate of form and mind, and through the senses, how upon contact consciousness come to be. Then from there, it develops into the fourth circle, which is the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. Now that phenomenal world, like the Buddha said, is basically a phenomenal world of consciousness. But within there, through your perception, you also get entangled to the form. That's why the phenomenal world of form and consciousness has power to delude living being. You grasp and you cling to all the external form. That's why there is form division or form delusion. Means form has power over you. It can cause you to grasp, cling and fight over it. Then not only form, all this manifestation, how do you know that this is a table, external form, the Buddha Rupang? The knowing comes from the mind. And through the mind, you only perceive it. Means perception is just an image, even more unreal. But externally, already not so real, dependent originating. Thanks. Condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's why you have to learn to see form, the unreality of form, via its condition arising nature. Then during the Buddha's time, he used the bullock cart analogy, which is very good. He asked the monk, he pointed at the bullock cart. He said, what do you see? The monk said, bullock cart. Yeah. Then what happened is, he asked the monk, dismantle them. All the parts, take them out. Then lay them on the ground. Then what do you see? The monk told him, no more bullock cart. Then he asked them, assemble it again. Then they assemble it. Then they say, now they see the Buddha again. So the Buddha, after that, explained to them, he said, do you realize or not, when all these parts that forms the Buddha, like the axle, the wheel, all the various parts, when you put them together, it performs a function, then you give it a name and a concept, because it performs a function. Then it's like exists, real already. But you can see clearly that this is all conditioned arising entity, dependent originating. Without the parts, it cannot be there. It does not exist. So what is real and what is unreal? So externally already dependent originating, condition arising, not so real, not what you think. When the causes and condition come together, then it manifests. Like the Buddha said, whatever arise, there are causes and condition behind. Understand that clearly. Just now the Panchaniyama, the five universal law of nature, the Panchaniyama, are the law that governs life and existence. So with that, you will come to understand that everything is dependent on the universal law that governs life and existence. It's not what you think. That's why the Buddha actually saw it in his own five aggregate of form and mind. They are not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling onto, grasp onto, and hold onto, and claim that this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. The Buddha said no such thing. So because of that, he said, the physical body, the five aggregate of form and mind, they are dependent, originating, condition arising entity. Means it is not something that you can hold on to and grasp onto and say, this is me, self. Understand? That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, I say, if this is self, then it will not go the way of nature. It will not lead to suffering. Because you can control, you can command. It's a permanent, unchanging entity. Don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. But it never able to do that. Because this one is not you, not a permanent, unchanging entity, not self. That's why it goes the way of nature. So everything that you come to perceive in this universe is the same. You look at the table, solid, appear like very real. But when I ask you, is it real? Of course, if you use the mundane mind, the logical thinking, yeah lah, real what? So solid what? Perform a function what? But do you know how it arises? The causes and condition behind. What are the causes and condition behind? You can see it, isn't it? You need the raw material. You need somebody who have the maybe skill, or maybe nowadays the manufacturing process is so advanced, they can use AI to do it and all those things. Then, when all these conditions come together, then it deliver this so-called table. Then you happen to have the condition to purchase it, or somebody purchase it and donate to the temple. Then it arise already, exists already. Like after you buy it, you can own it, you can use it and develop whatever you want with it. So to you, it's very real. But when you understand the causes and conditions behind, then you realize any of these causes and conditions, if it's not there, this table will not be here. And that's all. Like our retreat. If the causes and conditions is not such, all of you all may not be here. That's why you can witness. There are many who actually earlier registered, then finally, because of something, they didn't come. then there are new people who replaces them and all those things. All this, for it to arise, to happen, need causes and conditions. For our retreat to be approved, we also need causes and conditions. We need to have our kayamita, especially through Paramasuri and some of our kayamita, have contact with Teng Siong Su Fu and also Tang Jia. Actually, it started earlier on when we first came. That time was Sui An. That time we don't even have an organization, nothing. But somehow, the causes and conditions fall into place. Then we were given the recognition and given the condition to hold all this retreat. That's how it happened. Then because of that, now Tang Jia is very helpful and very close to us and allow us to do this for, I think, more than 10 years already. 10 over years already. If I'm not wrong, it's about 2009 or 13. I think before that, we already, Fraser's Hill, then after that we came here, I think. Nelmai is around there, maybe about 11 or 12 years. So if you look at all this, you need causes and conditions for phenomena to arise, for condition to arise, for thing to manifest. And all this follow nature's law. Without the affinity, the condition, nothing manifests. So externally, already dependent originating condition arising, not so real, like the block cut. Then the next understanding is, how do you know it's a block cut? Through what? Through your mental? Rub off already. Mental perception, isn't it? Your aggregate of mind. Through your knowledge, memory, and you perceive it. And what is all this perception, like the physics experiment? It's just an image in your brain, isn't it? Correct or not? This image, in fact, is laterally inverted. And through this, you perceive it, and you give it a name and a concept. You say, blocker. Externally, already dependent originating, condition arising, not so real. But how do you know there is a blockade? Through your mental perception. It's just an image up here. It's even more unreal in there. Then why do you cling onto it, grasp onto it, and give so much meaning? Even our own form and mind is the same. We identify, we cling. Because why? We perceive it. And through our mundane thinking, we believe this is real. This is what we are. Because the thought will tell you, how can you say this is not real, not me? I want to run, I run. I want to jump, I jump. I want to laugh, I laugh. I want to cry, I cry. I want to commit suicide, also can. Why you say not me? So if they use this type of logic, of course, due to your sakyadity, you will believe, how can it be not me? But then I have given example before, isn't it? This one is just like a car and a driver and a sana. The car is like the vehicle of physical body. And who is the driver behind? The consciousness, isn't it? So the car and the driver analogy is quite close, but not exact. So if let's say there is a driver who can drive the car, you can see clearly the driver is the driver, isn't it? The car is a car, isn't it? Okay? But how come in the human form, within our physical body and the consciousness trapped inside, you cannot see? You see this as a human being, understand? You cannot see that there is a vehicle and there is a driver. But the car, you can see clearly, isn't it? So, like me, if I say I want to walk, I walk, I want to run, I run. No? So the car also say what the driver say. I want to speed, accelerate, I can do. I want to brake, I want to turn, I want to do all those things, I can. But within what is allowable, understand? Provided the engine got no problem, understand? all the moving part got no problem. Maybe now electric car, all the wiring or no problem. But let's say something is not right with the car. You put a Formula One driver there, it will also not move. You understand or not? It's like the human being. You say, yeah, it's me, I want to walk, I walk, I understand, I understand. But when there is paralysis, what happens? You ask the paralyzed person to stand, he cannot stand. You ask him to walk, he cannot walk. Understand or not? Then you see, hey, really? Without the causes and conditions, if everything is not functioning according to the causes and conditions, then there is no condition for that person to do what he used to do. Understand? So, everything within our phenomenal world exhibit that dependent originating condition arising phenomena. It's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling onto, grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I. Nothing is eternal. Within the conditioned world, everything is condition arising, causal phenomena, dependent originating. That's why the Buddha used the word paticca samuppada, the law of dependent originating. So if you learn how to see form, the unreality of form, then only you can see beyond form to be free from form delusion. Do you understand now? So how to see form? From the physics experiment we know, you need your senses, your eye functioning. Then you need the consciousness. Then together with the external sense data, which is color, shape and form. The three come into contact, give rise to the respective seeing consciousness. And this seeing consciousness, like the Buddha say, in the seeing is only that consciousness. There is no sakayadity or no being, the egoic mind, to see. That's why it is still functioning in accordance with nature's law. But the moment the egoic mind comes in, then what happens? It input the content of consciousness. When it input the content of consciousness, then the seeing become like distorted. Understand? Huh? I see. So that distorted seeing is mundane seeing, egoic seeing. As I learn how to see form, if we use the mundane mind to perceive, then what we see is mundane perception, mundane seeing. This is not the direct seeing. This is not seeing things as they are. This is seeing things according to your conditioning, your knowledge, your belief system. That's why different people call it by different names. If you are English speaking, you call it by the English name. If it's other dialect or language, you call it different. Then all the mundane seeing is like chaplang seeing. Everybody see different things. But direct seeing, no word, no concept, nothing to argue. You see things as they are. There is no more delusion. Then it cannot deceive you. Where you see clearly that all this is mental, consciousness, arise and pass away. As real as it can be, the moment you close your eye, that creation is gone, understand? The moment you open your eye, all this that appear within the field of perception become like real, exists. So what is real? What is unreal? That's why the Buddha say, through consciousness, we are the greatest magician, illusionist, that create illusion for us to see. And if we cannot penetrate this, then we will not develop the wisdom to see form. That's why I say, learn to see form. This mundane seeing is also useful, important. Well, within the conditioned world, everybody depends on their senses and their conditioning knowledge to see. So this is the norm. We need to develop this understanding so that we does not argue with people and get ourselves into trouble. Then when we learn how to see form, we must develop the wisdom to a higher level, to see the unreality of form. How do you see that it's unreal? Well, this one, like the block card, dependent originating condition arising cause of phenomena, not so real, not what you think. Then how do you know that that form is what you have labeled? It's because through perception, you perceive it through your memory, which is knowledge. And from there, it's just an image up here, your brain, maybe laterally inverted. This is even more unreal. Understand? How real can the image be? Externally, the block card or the external form is already dependent originating, not what you think. Then how do you know that thing? Through your mental perception, which is an image, is even more unreal. Then why do we cling onto it, grasp onto it, give meaning, and get ourselves entangled over it? That's why we call it empty nature of existence. Dependent originating means what? Impermanent, understand not? All these are like the Buddha's explanation. Whatever arises, there are causes and conditions behind. When causes and conditions comes to be, it arises. When the supporting condition continues to sustain itself, it continues to exist. When supporting conditions cease to be, it ceases to be. So from this understanding, you will come to a very penetrative realization that whatever that is dependent originating is impermanent. Whatever that is dependent originating, dependent, D, T, is it T or D? D-E-N-T, So whatever that is dependent originating is impermanent. So this understanding is very important. Dependent on condition, it arises. And when condition evolve or changes, it continues to evolve and change. That's why the physical body will go through birth, old age, sickness, and death. Well, these are the four-phase cycle. Being born, then it go through the growth phase, then decay, then die. So everything within the phenomena will exhibit these characteristics of dependent origination. If it's impermanent, then we know this is not a permanent unchanging entity. Unchanging entity. Then this dependent originating condition, they follow nature's law. And because of that, if you want things your way, which is not in accordance with the pancha niyamas, then suffering will arise. Then suffering will arise. So you must see this clearly. When you cannot get what you want, because what you want is a craving, understand not? It's a craving. Your way or what you want is a craving. Not according to nature's law that governs life and existence. That's why you will get yourself into trouble. As per the First Noble Truth reality, when things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, you suffer. So the characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering is very clear. Then because it's impermanent and it leads to suffering, you will see clearly the empty nature of existence. Means everything is not what you think. Like I explained, within the conditioned world that we live in, everything follows this law. Then if you want to understand life, which is related to existence. To live life is to exist, isn't it? True or not? Huh? Then to exist is to go through time. Very good. Go through time. So this time we can define past, present, and future. So this one, past, present, and future. And future. This defines the whole spectrum of time, isn't it? So within these three periods of time, which is the reality? Future, yet to come. So definitely not a reality, isn't it? The past is already gone. It's also not a reality, isn't it? True or not? So the only reality within time or existence is the present moment. That's why we talk about present moment awareness. Present moment awareness. Or the power of now, to be within the moment, in sati. So this one is the only reality. Present moment, awareness, only reality. Then I ask you a question. How solid or how real is the present moment? The moment you talk about it, this moment is already dead and gone, isn't it? Then next moment, then next moment. So this present moment, if you can be aware to be with it, it is only split second. Is dead and gone. And this is the only reality. So how real can life be? How real can existence be? To see this time, you need awareness. Understand or not? Well, this is time related. Past and future are what we call illusionary time. You understand or not? Well, it's already gone. But your thought creates the illusion that there is a past through memory. 往事只能回味. Can follow? Then future haven't happened yet. That's why it's also an illusion. One day, I will become enlightened. Is that a reality? It's not a reality, is it? If I have not followed that type of teacher or meditation, I should have been enlightened now. That if is also not a reality. That's why the past is already gone, not a reality. Future yet to come. Present moment is the only reality. And this is life. This is existence. And this one is so transient. The word is transient. Transient. Split second it arises and passes away. Split second it arises and passes away. It's day and gone. So if real... If life and existence is so transient, that's why you can see this in the meditative state. Split second is dead and gone. Split second is dead and gone. And every consciousness is a different consciousness, but it's dependent originating. So who are you? What are you? Is the thought process that arise and pass away dependent originating you? Cannot be you, isn't it? Definitely. So you see all this when you are mindful and aware that penetrative awakening, that insight into it will awaken you. Everything is just like that, moment to moment, arise and pass away, arise and pass away. Like I share with you all, not in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Your five aggregate of form and mind, feeling arise and pass away. Did you die? You didn't die, isn't it? That is feeling you. Definitely no lah. But to you, the feeling is like so real, no? Understand, no? Hey, that pain really severe, no? Why you say no to me? But if feeling is you, what happens is, if feeling become unpleasant feeling, when it changed, did you die? You should have died with it, isn't it? But you didn't die. So what is feeling? Huh? Feeling is dependent originating, understand or not? Dependent on your physical body, your senses. And that feeling arises. Pleasant and unpleasant, painful or what, depending on the causes and conditions behind, understand or not? Even the newborn baby also know. Yeah? When they have uncomfortable condition or situation, they also cry, and sometimes cry very loud somehow. Then when you get injury or what, when you suffer, like terminal disease, those going through cancer or those things, the suffering to them is very real. But they don't know that feeling come and go, and they didn't die. So how can feeling be you? Perception also come and go, you also didn't die. Similarly, your thought process, your mind state, sankhara, fear arises and pass away, you didn't die. So how can fear be you? How can anger be you? So when you are mindful and observant, then you realize all this is delusion. Where they are not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp on to, and hold on to, and say, this is me. Therefore, this is what I am. So, the law of dependent origination, straight away, when you awaken to it, you know it is impermanent, where it's dependent originating. Then, it's condition arising, causal phenomenon. And it exists within life, within existence, which is time-based. And we have gone through within time. The only reality is the present moment, which is so transient. That's why if that is the case, then how real can life and existence be? That's why this one is empty nature. The easiest example to understand this is, I ask you a question. You cannot deny you were born from your mother's womb since birth until now, is it? Can agree or not? Huh? Yeah, you want to say something? Ah, yes, pass the mic to her. Yeah. Ah, the mic. Ah, yeah. Pass the mic to her. Yeah. Can hear, but for the recording, it cannot go in. You need the recorder to track it down. You can come in front.
Right. If you were to speak, if you were to read the Heart Sutra,
yes.
It mentions that there is no birth, no death, and no old age and death.
But before that, before that statement, before that you describe, there is something written in the Heart Sutra.
Yeah, that's, what was it? No birth, no death.
No, before that.
Yeah, I know, I'm trying to think because...
In true emptiness.
Sorry?
That statement is in true emptiness.
In true emptiness, yes, that's true.
There is no birth.
Yeah.
Because that is the unconditioned. We are talking about the conditioned world, understand now, which is totally different. That's why in the unconditioned, there is no old age, sickness and death. Yeah. No one born, no one die, no one sick. And that is the supramundane wisdom. When you penetrate the mundane existential world, when you go beyond thought, beyond mind, and realize the cessation, which is Nibbana, then you understand that in reality, there is no such thing. No one die, no one born, no one sick. But within the conditioned world, there is such thing as a human being. There is such thing as the law of karma.
Yeah.
But that one exists within the conditioned world.
That's right.
So what I want to explain is another aspect. Maybe you listen, then you can develop the understanding.
Yeah.
So since birth until now, you cannot deny you were born. And you went through all the moment-to-moment of experience in life. Is it real?
Mundane mind always make you realize that it is real, but in reality, it's always not real. Right?
Okay. A more precise understanding is, like I said, you cannot deny that all these moments happen.
Yeah.
Understand or not?
Yeah, that's right.
When I ask you, is it real? You have to sincerely investigate. Is it real? I give you the answer, then you understand. It's never real. Why? Because all those things gone. Past already gone. Understand or not? You can only recall through? Memory. How real is memory?
Accumulated experiences.
Accumulated experiences. Very good. So, how real can it be? That's why empty nature existence. Whether you exist or you don't exist, when you truly penetrate the mundane thinking, you will realize the supramundane, which is totally beyond. Like we know, we have been born for aeons and aeons of birth and death through the karmic process. Every one of these that you come is a segment of that life, understand? And each of these segments that you are born into, which one is you? None of them are you. They are all dependent originating entity, phenomena, come and go, condition arising, cause of phenomena. So empty nature existence is what sunyata is all about. Understand? So this understanding of sunyata is very difficult, very penetrative. But you need all this explanation for you to understand. Otherwise, the mundane thinking will attach and cling and give meaning. And that grasping is what sacrality is all about. Yeah. The egoic mind is all about. So thank you for your...
Yeah, but another thing, another point is I have is that the Diamond Sutra really tells you that it cuts through illusion and delusion. So,
but the Diamond Sutta, you know the famous stanza, no? The four stanza.
The four stanzas, no.
一切有为法, 如梦幻泡影, 如露亦如电, 应作如是观. That one cut through all delusion, true. In English is, everything within the conditioned world is conditioned Dhamma. 有为法, conditioned Dhamma. And this condition Dhamma is Zu Mong Huan Pao Yi. Mong is dreamlike. Huan is illusion, illusionary. Pao is like a bubble, arise and pass away. Like your feeling, pop, gone. And then like a shadow, appear very real, keep on following you, but it's just a shadow. Understand? So, if the condition world's condition Dhamma is dreamlike, illusionary, like a bubble and a shadow, then why do you grasp onto it and give meaning and be deceived and deluded by it? That's why he said, they are impermanent. 如露亦如电, like a morning dew and a lightning flash. A lot of consciousness, when you understand, it's very fast. Split second is gone. Split second is gone. The one that lasts longer is like a morning dew. When the sunlight come out, when it evaporates, it's gone. Empty. 应作如是观, you have to contemplate it such. That is what life is. That is what existence is. That's why that one penetrates illusion. It's correct. But you must understand the four stanza. Because that is what the Diamond Sutta is. The diamond is chosen because it's the hardest element that can cut through all things. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Good. So by now, you can understand why the Buddha says anicca, dukkang, and anatta. So this is the three universal characteristics. Anicca, dukkang, and anatta. This anatta is the most important. In the Theravada tradition, the teaching, they normally say anatta is what? Huh? They always tell you, non-self. In fact, non-self is just a small aspect of anatta. In fact, anatta is a very powerful teaching. The Mahayana teach this sunyata. Sunyata, most people explain it as emptiness. Emptiness. Actually, it's not empty of anything, or there is no thing inside there. Emptiness means it is not what you think. Although life and existence appear very real, appear like it existed, but it's not what you think. We are empty nature existence, like just now I told you. You can only recall through memory. If nobody remembers you, you like don't exist. Understand? So that memory is what the mundane mind holds on to and make it appear real. Yeah, it's an illusionary time. The reality is within the moment it arises, it passes away. So like the saying goes, when you are born into this world, you come empty. When you pass away, you also pass away empty. Then why do you grieve over emptiness in between? We are all of the craving, fighting, suffering that living beings spend so much energy and time and even their wealth to fight for it, to get it. Finally, it turned out empty nature existence. So this emptiness is empty nature of existence. Existence to you may be very real, but to the awakened one, they are not what you think. That's why I used to share with a lot of Kayamita. Later on, when you penetrate the Dhamma understanding, when you awaken, then you realize with the mano or the mundane mind, you think also like that, you don't think also like that. You can understand that statement or not. Yeah? Your thinking got no bearing. That's not. Because it's just a thought. That's not. Thought come and go. It's how you input the content of the thought and how it goes into the nature's law, especially via the law of karma that manifests all this dependent originating condition for life and existence to manifest within our universe. So when you understand all this, then you realize all our existence is empty, not what you think. Like I said, the aeons and aeons above and there, which one is you? None of them is you. When you were born as an animal, is that you? When you're born as a human being now, is that really you? Then in future, maybe born devas or what? Then which one is you? All this you cannot deny, they actually happen. But it's within memory, within consciousness. And as real as can be, the present moment, that is the only reality. And if this one is so transient, how real can life be? How real can existence be? So see this. Then the Diamond Sutta stanza become very clear. Then the Heart Sutta teaching also become very clear. We are in true emptiness. Means after you have penetrated and realized true emptiness, this is true emptiness, empty nature existence. Then you will realize no one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old. And no four noble truth also. Everything doesn't exist. That's why that is the supramundane, the unconditioned realization. That type of penetrative wisdom is what enlightenment is all about. But you must not be one-sided. If you penetrate that and doesn't understand the conditioned Dhamma within the conditioned world, you are still not with the complete wisdom to live life, to understand life. Well, life has its own reality, even though it's transient, not what you think. That's why in the Heart Sutta is mentioned, true emptiness is wonderful existence. You can remember? 真空妙有. After you penetrate that, life becomes meaningful, wonderful. It doesn't mean that everything is suffering. Don't want to know. Then wants to meditate until enlightenment, then cease, disappear. That is not understanding life. To understand life is to understand both the mundane and the supramundane. Yeah. Because that is the mundane mind. Yeah, the citta. Yeah. Oh, never mind. It's okay. Because we already exceed the time. 9:38 already. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah. Just let things be. Yeah. I have to end already. Yeah. Okay. So with that, I think we will end today's sharing, which is very useful. Hopefully later on from the recording, you listen to it again. Then hopefully there are Kayamita who can follow and develop the understanding that this one will be more and more penetrative as we continue with the sharing. Because as we continue with the sharing, more and more understanding will unfold. Well, in the past, I can only share and teach until the level where the Kayamita can understand. But this retreat, like I said, will be different. Well, what I explain will be a continuation of what has been taught to you all earlier on. Well, now the consciousness is different. There are many Kayamita who has progressed. And they are very different. They not only can understand, they can also have that realization within them. So that is what the big difference is. Okay? So we end. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so we will do the sharing of merit, transfer merit. But before that, I think we will chant the Heart Sutta.
Namo Ta Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sai Namo Ta Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sai Namo Ta Bei Guan Shi Yin Pu Sai Namo He Lai Tan Na Tuo Lai Ya Ye Namo A Li Ye Po Lu Jie Di Shi Po La Ye Puti Sato Poye Moha Sato Poye Moha Jaru Ni Jaye Ansa Pola Fai Shutan Na Tansye Namo Si Chi Li Tuo Yi Meng E Li Po Lu Jie Di Shi Fo Lai Leng Tuo Po Namo Na Lai Jin Si Si Li Mo He Pan Tuo Sa Mi Sa Po Er Ta Dou Shu Peng Er Si Yun Sa Po Sato Namo Po Sato Namo Po Jie Mo Fa Te Do Dan Zhi Ta An A Po Ru Si Lu Jia Di Jia Ru Di Yi Si Li Mo He Pu Ti Sato สัพพะสัพพะโมไลโมไลโมสีโมสีลิทวยินจุลุจุลุเจมมทุลุทุลุฟาเสยติโมหะฟาเสยติทัวไลทัวไลติลีนิสิฟอไลเยเจอไลเจอไลโมโมฟาโมไลมุติลีอีสีอีสีเชนไนเชนไนอไลเชนฟอไลเชลีฟาซาฟาเชนฟอไลเชยฮูลูฮูลูโมไลฮูลูฮูลูสอไลสอไลสีลีสีลีสุลุสุลุพุทธิเยพุทธิเยพุทโธเยพุทโธเยมิติลีเยนาไลจินสิติลีสิลีนาโพเยโมไนสัพพะสิทโธเยสัพโหมโหสิบตัวเยสัพโหสิตัวยี่สิบพันลายสัพโหนาไลจินสิสัพโหมโหไลนาไลสัพโหสิไลสันอามุเจเยสัพโหสัพพะโมหะอาสิทโธเยสัพพะหะจะจิไลอาสิทโธเยสัพพะหะปุถะโมจิสิทโธเยสัพพะหะนาไลจินสิพันเจไลเยสัพพะหะโมโพลิสันเจไลสัพโหนะโมหะไลตันนาตัวไลยะเยนะโมอลิยะโพลุเจติสิพันไลสัพโหอันสิเตมโตมันตัวไลปัตตัวเยสัพโหจิตติจิตติปุรโรจิตติปุรโรสันจิตติปุถิสัพโห揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃观自在菩萨心生般若波罗蜜多时照见五蕴皆空度一切苦厄舍利子色不异空空不异色色即是空空即是色受想行识亦复如是舍利子是诸法空相不生不灭不垢不净不增不减是 故空中无色无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味诸法，无眼界乃至无意识界，无无明亦无无明尽，乃至无老死亦无老死尽，无苦集灭道无智亦无得亦无所得故，菩提萨埵依般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想究竟涅槃三世诸佛依般若波罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提故，知般若波罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚。故说般若波罗蜜多咒，即说咒曰：揭谛，揭谛，波罗揭谛，波罗僧。揭谛菩提萨婆诃，揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃，揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now we share merit, transfer merit, then we end. Okay, for those who are new, you can turn to your normal chanting book. Just now the two, Da Bei Zhou and the Heart Sutra Sing Ching is at the back, page 19 onward. But now our sharing of merit, you can turn to page 15. But we only chant the short version. Okay, let us compose our mind. Develop the faith, sadha, then mindfully we shall rejoice and share this merit with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasatta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkantu loka sasana etavata chamihi Sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Devo vasatu kalina sasa sampati hito cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. Imina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Before we disperse, I would like to maybe go through tomorrow day 2, 3, 4 schedule, the retreat schedule. You can wake up around 5:45 and clean up so that you can be ready for the morning session, which is 6:15. And those who wants to go down and join the temple committee, the monks and the nun, to participate in their Mahayana chanting recitation, which is very unique and special too. You can, I think they will start around 5:30. 5:30. Then it will end slightly later after 6:15, I think. So you can come out later. But for those who wants to come back early, maybe you try to come out by 6:15. You need not go through the whole thing unless you are quite a while with the chanting ready. Then you want to go through it, it's up to you. Otherwise, we can come early so that I can have my morning puja. Then we can do some simple morning mindfulness and stretching exercise. Bring along the weight that I ask you to bring along. Whether it's 1 kg, 2 kg or 3 kg is up to you. If not, you use water bottle. But water bottle may not be that effective. Anyway, you can observe and learn. Then after that, we can have our normal morning sitting. Then our breakfast, supposed to be what time? Oh, same. So no need to adjust. 7:30 to 8:30. So this breakfast, including your rest and all those things, is 1 hour, so more than half time. Then after that, we will continue our morning chanting and reflection at 8:30. Then after that is the usual Dhamma sharing. Then until lunchtime. Lunchtime is 12 o'clock, isn't it? We put here 12:15 to 12:45. So I have to adjust this one. Oh, can. Because 15 minutes break for those helping with their duty. So we stop at 12. It's okay. So everybody can go down and do your whatever duty. Then 12 o'clock is lunch, so I will adjust that 12 to 12:30. Okay, that's about all. Then dinner is the same like today. The announcement is you have to keep all your sitting cushion, everything. Pak Masuri will brief you.
Are there all before we call it a day? Shall we pay our respect to Triple Gem and Bratio? Ready? Bow. 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 Okay. Thank you. Okay.